And 3, 2, 1. Ahoy! Welcome aboard. Oh, fuck. I fucked up the music cue. 1 second. I gotta do that. I forgot about the music cue. No. I loaded up another one for you.
Oh, wow.
Ahoy, round two. Welcome aboard Captain Collins Radio Voyage. Or no, just Radio Voyage. I'll get it one day. I'm Captain Collins, as always, piloting in this voyage with me, again, as always, Mr. First Mate Moody. How's it going?
I'm doing good. I got Tenoch in my lap. He's kind of sleeping. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good. I was telling Jake before we went on air that I think my scoliosis, my minor case of scoliosis I've had in the recent history, I think it just cleared up because I have a straight neck for the first time. I cured my nerd neck, which is huge.
Right. I mean, it's can you imagine if it happened that something just like kind of snapped? I mean, I guess that's how you feel, but
yeah,
I don't feel like I have any kind of chronic, like, well, I have stomach things, but. So yeah, I guess if I had whatever your subtle hurt back is equivalent to my stomach problems, and that just randomly went away one day, I would be thrilled. I'd be telling everybody.
What's your stomach problems?
I just have stomach problems. I think it's like has to do with being Jewish. It has to do with me being lactose intolerant. I don't know what.
So it's just when you eat stuff, you get the rumbles.
Pretty much. Well, I think. Yeah, I just get the rumbles. The biggest thing is I need to, if I don't have fruits and vegetables, my stomach will hurt. Like it just will. Like after a weekend of drinking and like a majority of the food is fast food, I'll feel terrible.
And it's always been like that?
Like within the past couple of years.
That's just getting older, man.
Yeah, I guess so.
Because I get the same thing, like kind of. Mm-hmm. I do have a weird stomach when it comes to milk. But I also accredit that to like every single generation of my family in the past, going back like probably multiple hundreds of years, all being dairy farmers. So like
that's evolution, dude. Literally.
Yeah.
You have evolved to be able to have lactose really well.
Yeah. When you work out, right? Do you ever watch like those YouTube videos?
Like
the guides.
Like workout videos.
Yeah.
I have, and I used to as like part of my routine, like kind of when I moved, well, like last summer, like towards the end of summer, I bought myself like resistance bands. So I would like cycle through a select amount of like videos that were like resistance band official like workouts. But I don't know if it's I got lazy or I just like kind of picked and chose the, you know, like the workouts that I liked and I just kind of created my own. But do you?
I mean, yeah. So the reason that I do stuff is because my dad's quite into weightlifting and he's been doing it for a while. So he's the one who's always instructing me on form and on like which exercises are the best ones to do, that kind of stuff. And then when I picked it up also during quarantine, when I kind of really like picked up the pace with it, there's these videos online. Athlene X is what they're called. Shout out to, I forget what the dude's name is on it, but he's just like
Athlene X.
Yeah, he's this really like super super buff like Italian New York dude. He's cool. And he, one of the guys he has on the show that always does his little examples is this guy who he makes fun of for being a fucking nerd.
That's great.
All the time, it's like this jock making fun of this nerd, and it's great. But the dude's like he's in good shape now and stuff. But what he says, like there's a video he did where it's like, I'm gonna teach you how to fix the nerd neck, is what he calls it. Where it's like, because our generation was raised at desks and on computers and always kind of like hunkered down over it like this, our necks are naturally predicated. You see it with a lot of people. Our necks are naturally predicated to go like that. And people at home, I'm kind of like slouching my neck forward a bit. And it's not the main part of the neck directly below your head that you need to work out for that. It's like the part that kind of, you know, with like big like muscle lifters and stuff, like Dwayne Johnson and stuff. If you look at him from a certain angle, it looks a little bit like his neck muscles here are so big. He looks a little bit like a tiny man within a bigger man. You know, like a little bit.
I know what you're saying about
This.
whatever these bone. Yeah, right.
Yeah,
Whatever. Oh,
like
I guess you're pointing a little for
that right
like the
there.
muscle that would control your neck, kind of like that,
Yeah, that there's
like
like
bleeds
there's
it into your collarbone.
there's this muscle that's kind of, I guess, like it connects the shoulders to
Yeah.
the thing. It's more in the back than it is in the front.
Okay.
But yeah, but that like that's the thing you have to exercise. And there's these specific ones he has you do, but one of the things that I remember him saying helped a lot was ab wheels.
Oh,
And
yeah.
I'm a total whore for ab wheels. I do
What do
them.
you do other? Okay, so I have an ab wheel too, and I use it every time I work out, but I just do it on the ground, like I do sets of 15. Is there like other workouts for it that I don't know
Yeah.
about?
Yeah. So I mean I so I because I'm I have a very, very fast metabolism, so I am unable to gain weight essentially. So like I can only get lean muscle ever basically. And I also have a lot less weight to carry when I'm doing exercises, which is definitely an advantage.
Right.
In some ways, I also can't bulk, so I could never be The Rock, for example. But that's all right. I'm more happy to be Bruce Lee anyway.
Yeah, I see
But
that.
yeah, so when I so when I'm like so like to like step it up kind of. I've never I like back in back when I was on crew, I was able to like be one of the people who could do the longest planks just because I had hardly
Okay.
any body fat on me, less weight to carry, and it's kind of just an exercise in stubbornness, right? It's if you can
Yes,
just
it is.
get your brain to just stay there for a long time, and I can do that. And so with that, like ab wheels have never been that difficult to me at all. So I looked up the same guy Athlenex. I looked up his video on like how to step it up. And the way you step it up is you use standing ab wheels. So instead of being on your knees, you're on your feet. And I've been doing those since the beginning of quarantine, like almost every single day. And
Yeah.
I can now do like a full extension ab wheel, like standing. And so I think that's what fixed the nerd neck, honestly. Because thinking about it,
Wow.
like that, and I stretch a lot too. I stretch my neck out a lot as well because it gets cramped because I'm doing those workouts all the time.
How do you, with the standing ab wheel, how many, like, do you just do them until you're tired, or do you have like a thing like I do 3 sets of 10 or whatever?
Yeah, so I do with that particular one at the moment, I do like 3 sets total, and I do
Yeah.
5 full extension ab wheels. And then I do 30 reps of like when you're on the chair kind of halfway and you're lifting one of your arms at a
Oh
time.
yeah.
You have
Yeah.
like your knee up on the chair and one of your arms back straight, and you're sort of lifting your weight basically full extension of your arm and then up to your pec kind of over and over.
Yep.
So I'll
Yep.
do five of the standing ab wheels, 10 of those, and I'll repeat that 3 times. In addition to whatever else I do.
Right.
So I think all those ab wheels is honestly what fixed the nerd neck,
Interesting.
which is great.
I think ab wheels are great. I didn't have it until like a decent way through quarantine, but Ben bought one like when he was staying at home. But when he left, I kind of like took all of his workout equipment and brought it back to Redondo. And that was my first time ever using ab wheels, but it was so good.
Yeah.
Like it's definitely the most effective ab workout in my opinion. Like, I do sit-ups and the bicycles and planks, or I have in the past. Like that's what I would do at Chapman and whatnot. But the ab wheel is just like it just really works. I don't know why.
Yeah. No, I love my dad because I'll be like do showing him a workout that I've done for like multiple months at that point, exhausted myself with, and he'll straight up be like, "You're an idiot. You're doing that all wrong." Or like you should be doing something else. Like the plank, for example, I could hold like a crazy long plank,
I
right?
remember, dude. You would put on like a 6-minute song and just plank the whole time.
I would, yeah.
Crazy, dude. I mean, you're really fit, obviously, but it's also crazy.
But I mean, what my dad basically told me is that if you're planking for longer than like a minute, maybe, you're not really
You're
doing
doing it
anything
wrong.
beyond there, you know?
Right.
Like it's you're the kind of the work is done at that point. It's like with certain exercises, it's about doing more of them, and with others, it's about kind of doing it less with a heavier weight.
Right.
So he
Right.
was kind of he showed me the ab wheels in previous years, and I just didn't have one, and he said, "You idiot, stop doing planks, do ab wheels." And I took his advice finally because I would became less stubborn in the past year, which is good. Progress, right? And I started doing that with the ab wheel, and he was right. He was absolutely right. It's a lot better, and I got gains, I guess. as they say in the industry. Yeah. Anyway, so Jake, as always, you sir are a fine bartender. Okay. The finest bartender, they say, in all of Redondo Beach. Nice. So now we're here for our segment of Jake's Bar. Jake's Bar today.
I would love to have the nomenclature of best bartender Redondo Beach. Anyways, today, look at that. Look at that nice, totally yellow color. This looks like a real drink that you would order off a cocktail menu. And it marks something interesting because I've just been like busy the past couple weeks. I don't know if it's definitely a mixture of work getting a little more intense. I'm on a new account. I have like a little bit more responsibility. So, but also the world is opening back up again. So like I have gone out to like get drinks with either Preston or Didi after work. And I have, you know, like we saw the movie and like just been busier. It's definitely not a bad thing, but I haven't had those days where like I'm done with work right at 5:30 or it's like a weekend and I have no plans and I just sit around and make drinks and sit on my balcony basically. So today I finally did it because you'll know why in about 2 seconds. And it's funny because we joked about it earlier on the show, but this drink is called the Royal Hawaiian.
Ah, nice.
And I'll tell you the history of it, but yeah, I booked a trip to Hawaii.
Oh shit.
Oh yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. So I booked a trip in August, staying in an Airbnb, and it's gonna be freaking sick. I don't have flights yet. I haven't rented a car because I'm gonna need to. I'm going with Didi, and it's gonna be sick. But anyways, say something.
Yeah. Well, I've never been, but like, which island are you going to? I have a vague idea of which island is which.
Okay. And the reason I said we're going to Oahu.
Cool.
And the reason I said I think we could talk about it a little bit before is because I recently got into a convo about like Hawaii and tourism and things like that, cultural appropriation basically, with Jesse a couple weeks ago, and I thought now would be as good of a time as any to chat about it on the podcast, right?
All right.
But anyways, so here's a good segue.
Wait, really? Before we segue, right? Cheers to Jake going to Hawaii. Excelsior. Mm. Stan shot. Stanley is on screen. Here's right Stan. Now. Cheers. Yes. I'm back at the point where I don't drink that much alcohol. Did not get me in the slightest. No Chase Collins has returned, motherfuckers.
That's dope. Well, anyways, I think this will be interesting if we can fall into a conversation. So I'll preface it all by telling you the little bit of history of this drink. It's called the Royal Hawaiian, I found it by looking up gin drinks, because over the summer I was making a lot of like proper tiki drinks with rum, and they're great. Rum is still my favorite liquor, definitely to like, you know, make drinks with. But I was doing it so often that it, like the work was not worth it, because I'd need to buy like, you know, random fruits and like special things and all these tools to like juice and make special kind of ice and all this kind of stuff. And then I just like, I did it so much that it wasn't fun anymore and it just felt like work. So then I switched to just, you know, old fashions or like relaxed things. So I found a gin I really liked. I was looking up gin drinks, and then I found this Hawaiian one. Basically, the history of it, or not the history of it, but it predates tiki drinks. Like it predates tiki bars and things like that. As I'm sure you know, or as I'm sure you would have guessed, tiki bars at least didn't originate like in Hawaii. And they're like, basically they're obviously not authentic. They're super old. Like they have a lot of history, like in the 20s and 30s and 40s, in Hollywood and Chicago, all these kinds of things. But it's obviously not genuine. Oh, dude, yeah.
Like that's Martin Denny. That's why I play as the intro. Cultural appropriation at its finest.
So I say all that to say.
We're saying drink. We're saying all this totally ironically. I'm kind of ironically, but we're, you know. Anyway, continue.
We'll get there.
Yeah.
Basically, this drink just predates tiki bars and tiki drinks and like what we think of with like a Hawaiian or a tropical drink. It's called the Royal Hawaiian because like back in the like late 1800s, there were like barely any travelers there, like 1890s. But there was one hotel on Waikiki, which is like one of the most famous beaches of all time, right off of Honolulu. It has like this history with the actual Royal Hawaiians, like the kings and queens of the Kingdom of Hawaii, because that was like the one specific place they like to do this outrigging thing, which was like a very early version of surfing. So that's how I found this drink. And it's super good because I know the history behind it. I can appreciate the taste in comparison to the other things. So I say all that to say, I understand like the pushback of cultural appropriation, I guess, and I'm just putting it specifically in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that just being interested in it or knowing the history and the lore is kind of enough to justify it. It's obviously a very systemic problem, but I kind of just came to the conclusion, and probably what made me stop drinking, or at least stop taking pictures of my tiki drinks and like seeking out all these kinds of things, is because I realized that just because I know all the fun facts behind it, I still am like just wearing a costume for a little bit. And I have to actually understand that there are legit people and like cultures. That's the actual thing. And then I'm just over here like wearing a costume. And I get that I used to think it was fine because I knew all the context basically, but I don't think it does. And I've just been thinking about it a decent amount because I'm going back to Hawaii in a couple weeks.
Well, first of all, just one thing to say is that like posting your drink of anything on social media is a little bit like, why you gotta do that? You know, no reason. It's just like, I came to that realization myself recently where it's like, it's so much better to have as little presence as you can on social media. Because it just ultimately is your demise, you know? It's so much better to either have human connections with people or just be comfortable with people not knowing what you're doing all the time, you know?
Right.
I love my alone moments. I love hanging out with friends, but, like, I don't need, like, someone who I haven't seen in 5 years who still follows me on Instagram to know what I'm doing at this exact moment, you know? Like, that's the only people that's really kind of catering to.
True.
But in terms of cultural appropriation, like, it's an interesting topic for sure. Because... like I'll use another example that's not Hawaii first, and then I'll make my way over to Hawaii, right? Because I'm gonna do the classic Kieran thing. I'm gonna bring up Japan, right? that like when you're over there, like the perfect example to kind of like corroborate the relationship between America and Japan culturally, it's mutual love and admiration in both ends. So like Hello Kitty is a great example because to us over here, Hello Kitty is like a symbol of Japan, and she's so cute and she's so like Japanese style, not like Mickey Mouse at all, like it's kind of their art style, and we're like, that's so cool. But in Japan, she's advertised as being, she's a cat from London, so the Japanese people, her backstory is that she's from London, so the Japanese people, she's Westerner, you know, and she's not Japanese, she's from the West, so they get her because they think she's so Western. And we get her because she's so Eastern. So Hello Kitty makes double the profits, right? Now, in terms of like, because I think it's on a case by case basis, kind of, right? Because like I went to Japan and I bought like a samurai robe for myself. And I have like I had anime T-shirts. Yeah, it's the one in the picture. Well, you know that one, that one picture.
I do actually.
The one
you posted on Instagram.
I'm wearing it in that one. I bought it that day.
That was your buzz cut reveal, I think, for me. I don't know if I knew your hair before seeing that picture.
You did, because I texted you. You were asking me how COVID was, and I wasn't even thinking about it. And I texted you a selfie of myself on the train because I'd already had a buzz cut for like two months then. And then you're like, okay, cool, but like, what the fuck is up with your hair? That was because you were I think the third person. The first was Alex because a girl I was on the trip with posted a video when we were getting. Like breakfast pancakes, and we didn't have many mutual followers, but Alex was one of them. So I got a text from him the day after being like, what the fuck? And then I got a text from somebody else, and I think I told you sort of like on accident, because that was the idea. It was that same social media thing where I was like, I'm gonna buzz my head, but if I post about it, it'll feel like I'm doing it for attention versus I just wanted to not have that much hair, you know? Yeah, I wanted to not have to like spend like 20 minutes working on my hair after I take a shower every single time, you know? But anyway, pivoting, back to the cultural appropriation thing. But over there, because I mean, the Japanese are huge cultural appropriators to like a sometimes within their culture, they're a very, very homogenous country. Like everybody, 99% of the population are the same race. They're just very unaware of a lot of racial issues because it's just not like a part of their culture kind of. And they're dismissive and it's not right necessarily, but it's also a different culture. So it's kind of, cultural relativism isn't always the best thing, but in this case, I do apply it a little bit because we're such a separate world over here to Japan over there. And it's like, we can make our judgments and stuff, but we can't actually like insert ourselves and like say like, we know better because we don't, we're in our country, they're in their country. But they're big cultural appropriators, like hip hop culture, Hispanic culture. I mean, obviously like America, like American things, London things, like they'll appropriate anything because it's just fun for them. And in the same way
that, you're saying in Japan.
Yeah. So like, for example, I mean, an example of a bad case of it is, that they'll do skin modifiers to an extent where it kind of verges on blackface a little bit. Mm. Where people will like extremely, extremely tan themselves, like beyond even the Jersey Shore levels. To replicate and like get perms and stuff, right? To replicate that kind of American hip hop feel to it, which is like, it's very dicey. I took a class on sociology in Japan while I was there. So that's kind of where I'm getting all of this. Okay. But there's like that, and there's countless examples. They'll kind of, you walk past a place and there's a place, I went to a bar at one point that was called Fight Club, and it was like themed after the movie Fight Club, basically, right?
That's up.
Which is cool. Like they do it in some cool ways too. But one of the trade-offs of that is that whenever people are like white people shouldn't wear samurai jackets or shouldn't wear those souvenir jackets or like the Bruce Lee style where they're kind of shiny and stuff. People in actual Japan love that. They love to see themselves represented in any capacity in America. Hmm. Perfect example with the Great Wall, that movie with Matt Damon. That had huge controversy in America because they were like, how are you going to make a movie called The Great Wall and have all Asian characters, but then have Matt Damon, the one white guy, as your lead, right?
It is like, funny, bro. That was really short-sighted.
But here's the thing, right? The movie bombed in America, but it made over $1 billion in Asia. They loved it over there because they love Hollywood. And if Hollywood makes a movie that is representing the culture, they like it. Like, I'm not making commentary on it, but that's what I learned in my class kind of. That's one case where it's like, I mean, and obviously the US and Japan don't have a great relationship, obviously, with the end of World War II and stuff. And
well, I think there are, I mean, stuff. It, obviously it wasn't that long ago. It was World War II.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels like, we both, like what you were saying before, we both love each other, at least pop culture wise.
Yeah.
I mean, politics. I would assume politics were on good terms.
Here, I'm gonna blow your mind a little bit, right? So do you know why Japan has this like super cool reputation all over the world? There's an actual historical reason for it, basically.
Okay, I would guess like the tech and like their shit, but
yeah,
I mean, tell me, I don't know.
So during World War II, the Japanese were kind of indoctrinated and brainwashed into believing that their emperor was a god, right? They believed that
during World War II?
World War II, yeah.
Yeah.
Because they were totally cut off from the rest of the world, and they believed that the emperor was like the physical embodiment of like the sun or like the god, right? Like there's kind of the imperial flag which had the sun on it, and they thought that they were kind of like in their philosophies the equivalent of like god, right? Even though they didn't even have the word religion, they didn't have a word for religion because it was just kind of a given to them. And then the United States, in a what I think it's pretty fair to say, but I would say an absolutely awful decision, is they said, we're going to drop 2 nukes on civilian populations, and they killed about 1 million people. The argument they use, or a million, billion, I'm not sure. But the argument they use to this day is that, like,
definitely a million.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. That's true. You're right. Definitely a million. But they say to this day, the argument they use is that if the war had gone on because, like, there were, like, kamikaze fighters and stuff who literally, like, crashed their planes into stuff.
I know the lives. Argument for it.
Yeah. And for the emperor and stuff. And, like, and it was kind of, the argument was 3 million versus 1 million, but also the 3 million would have been soldiers for the most part versus that one. And it would have been, like, from both nations versus the 1 million was civilians in a population that's much smaller than the United States. And it's a war crime they committed, basically, right? So with all of that and with kind of when that happened, people, the veil kind of lifted and people realized that their emperor was not this holy person. And so they kind of basically they wanted to get in the good grace of the United States after what happened. And so the United States took advantage of that. And the Japanese allowed the United States to write their constitution for them. which is so fucked. And so they literally had to invent a word in Japan for religion at that point. Because the concept of religion, they had Buddhism, they had Taoism, but those aren't really religions, they're more philosophies. It's only in the modern vernacular they're referred to as religions. Because they're not really religions. They're just ways of life. You can be all those things and still be a Catholic, a Jewish person, anything else. But anyway, so one of the things they also put in there, though, the United States, being the clever assholes they are, said that Japan are not allowed to have a military. They're not allowed, right?
Oh.
So Japan in that situation said, okay, like in the preceding years, they said, well, how are we going to hold our own internationally? They rely on their allies, the United States and all these other countries. So they had to become a very beloved culture, kind of, right? They had to become cool Japan. That's kind of the thing that was coined as like they became sort of everyone's friend internationally, and their exports were great, and they built themselves technologically. Suddenly a country that was super isolated opened their doors wide open, right? So the reason that Japan has that status is being like such a heavy, there's hard power and soft power, right? Hard power is like military force, soft power is sort of persuasion. And Japan are like the embodiment of persuasion and soft power because for that reason. So that's a long time ago, and that constitution problem is still a thing, and they still can't organize their military, and that was a very big problem, and that's how their current president got elected, because he was buddies with Trump. And a lot of Japanese actually really liked Trump when I was over there. I had a conversation with a good number of people who said they really love Donald, which sucks, because again, it's more kind of like brainwashing of he doesn't give a shit. He's just saying that to get popular favor, populism behavior. But yeah, so to this day, that's still a problem there. But in terms of actual cultural appropriation and stuff, like they say kind of, please wear the jackets, wear the samurai stuff, because they like to see the representation. They love us. They like to see that. And we nowadays culturally, like we love them, and they'll wear our stuff. We wear their stuff, kind of. If you look at Hawaii, it's a little more complicated for sure, because.
Well,
go for it. Go for it. I've been talking forever.
No, that's fine. I think it's more strict. I mean, there's like a 15, well, no number, but I'm saying there's so much context into the situation with Hawaii, because obviously their pop culture is super popular and people in America and around the world love it. And here's like a huge reason why, and it has to do with these wars and all this political stuff and da 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 da. I think it's much more straightforward in Hawaii. They're just people, you know, and they have such a finite amount of space that's their own, you know, and everyone else just wants to go there because it's pretty or because the drinks taste good.
Yeah. Right?
So I would say that Japan is much more complicated because there's all that extra shit behind it.
Do you know the history with Hawaii, though, and why it's a state?
I know a decent amount.
I only know a little bit, too, so I'm hoping that you know more than me, because I know, like, the slightest bit about it, but you might know more.
I used to know a lot more, but essentially it was an actual, like, other country. It was just, I think it was called the Kingdom of Hawaii, literally, pretty sure. But anyways, they just had a royal family, and it eventually became a territory because I'm sure that they were not able to hold their own and whatever the U.S. needed it for, like pre-World War One. It was actually a lot of sugar plantations. It wasn't like slavery, but they had a ton of sugar plantations, which would then get shipped, and dole, like the pineapples. So I think that that's how America like got involved, like a very long time ago, like more than 100 years ago. But it was still the Kingdom of Hawaii with like actual kings and queens and full-on native people and towns and a government and everything. And then Pearl Harbor happened, and then basically America took it over. And from what I understand, like the queen was literally like, they literally like barricaded her in the equivalent of the White House, because they didn't have any government that, or any army that could like actually fight back against the Americans, which had fully been there, like full on military areas. And said, we're either going to kill you right now and take it over, or you can surrender it. But either way, it's coming to us. Like, they physically gave her no other option. And I visited that, like, the cool fun fact about it, which is so annoying. Not annoying that I know these things, but it's like leading into the reason why I'm feeling uncomfortable. But I toured that like building. It's called Ileana's Palace. You know, like their version of the White House, basically. And it's the only royal building in the United States of America, because it's full on a royal building that we've just taken over and been ruling for like 80 years now. But it's the only actual royal place, which makes sense and it's so cool. So I toured it. But it just doesn't change the fact. I was trying to argue with Jesse for no reason. We were really arguing about it. But I think because I was trying to say, what's the difference from Hawaii and the native people in Hawaii than somewhere like Arizona or like any, you know, Idaho? Like any random state where there had to be tons of Native Americans back in the day. And obviously there's tons of differences, but I think like literally just because they're an island, like it's so far removed from everything that I think the Native people there, there's just way more of them. Like it was just separated from like the main story of America, where it's so clear to tell, like, this is the native portions, and like, this is how, like, there's so many that you can talk to and just like understand, versus somewhere like Idaho, it's just literally there's not enough representation.
Yeah, I mean,
for anyone to care.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, right? Like, this isn't in any way justifying the taking over of native lands historically, because obviously that stuff is super messed up. But like, I guess the logic they used at the time, what I learned in history class anyway, was like manifest destiny, which is, again, fucked up, but it's right, the idea that, right, like, the United States' destiny is to get from the Atlantic Ocean to the Pacific Ocean, right? And to stretch their country all the way across. And it does not justify in the slightest, not saying that, but like that was kind of the logic of the time, whereas going over all the way out to Hawaii was kind of that's the next step, you know? That's like kind of going to like pure on like imperialism, totally, you know, of just saying like, we're gonna colonialism, whatever you, I don't know what, I think they're both correct in this context, I'm not sure though, but like,
but going, I mean, over and saying what they would say,
yeah, is like going over and saying like, okay, like because we can, essentially, right? Which is, mm-hmm, that's messed up. You should never do something just because you're physically able to do it, you know? Mm-hmm. And especially like against the will of others, like super messed up. Like, it's, what's done is done. They're a state now. And
they've been a state for like, dude, like almost 100 years.
Yeah.
That was my drunk logic, is like, what's the difference between Arizona and Nevada? Just one's closer. Like, that's what I was trying to argue.
But if you look at it in the context of like Cuba though, right? Because mm-hmm, Cuba was all, and like, I mean, Puerto Rico is also a good example, but I just know more about Cuba. But Cuba was a U.S. territory. It wasn't a state, but it was controlled and owned by the U.S. Similarly to Hawaii, I believe. I think like they had a relationship with the queen or something, then they decided to just like say, fuck it, we're going to make it a state. Right. Which is, mm-hmm, not right, but anyway. But with Cuba, like Cuba was kind of their Vegas, essentially, right? People would go over to Cuba to make bad decisions, right? Versus right. This was a land where people were like, there was huge wealth inequality, and like the people who were actually from Cuba were suffering terribly. And people yeah. like drunk Americans would just come over and be like, this isn't real life. This is Cuba, you know,
I'm and just drink gonna... their drinks.
You yeah. know? And they just be assholes kind of right. So that's how,
drink
that's
their
how
drinks, enjoy their beaches.
Yeah. That's like, how, and that's how that, and then like Che Guevara rose up and the kind of Cuban revolution happened and stuff. And they kind of fought back for their territory. And historically speaking, like we learned a little bit differently in our history books, but the more I've gotten older, the more I've seen it from a more objective stance. Like they absolutely had the right to do so, you know, because they were being mistreated. And that's some straight up colonialism right there. So if it came into news that there was like, I know there's been talks for a very long time about Hawaii leaving the United States and becoming its own thing. I'd say power to him. You know, I don't know enough about the issue to really like properly like die on that hill. So don't want to be misquoted on this or anything as saying like if that's not a good take to have. But I'm pretty sure it is that it's like it's the will of the people. You know, yeah.
Right. I knew the only time, you know, I visited Hawaii like, you know, maybe twice as a kid and did a very standard like California. Like, you know, we stayed in a nice hotel and we probably didn't really leave property growing up. It was only till later on that I changed the way I visited. But I don't know what the fuck I was trying to say, and that doesn't matter. But the second thing I was gonna say, that's so funny, but the second thing I was gonna say is I do the trip differently. Like I don't stay in the big fancy hotel and not leave the property and just whatever. I don't stay in the big fancy hotel.
You don't do the touristy shit.
Right. But I don't know if that's even more of the problem. Like I swear the place where I stayed, where I have stayed twice and now I'm planning on staying again around basically the same part of the island is like less than local. Like there's it's like an extremely local scene, like where there's like a house every like 50 yards basically, and there's basically like a cliffside on this side of the street, a two-lane street, and then houses, and then like the most beautiful beach you've ever seen basically. And twisting with the coves is like different crazy hikes and like a ton of like old historical places to just go visit that are like super either well protected, not studied, like literally like ancient temple situations. But anyways, yeah, I don't do the touristy stuff. I try like my very best to just like literally just appreciate it because I know the context and history of like all these kinds of things. And I used to think that that's the way to do it because you're not feeding into like the problematic stuff. But then I'm just entering other people's spaces. Like when we got the Airbnb, there's some DM feature where like the owner of the house is able to like chat with you a little bit before signing off to say, you can rent it and I'm going to charge you kind of thing. And they were like, hi, can I have the age of the people who want to stay here and the reason for visiting the island? And I think it was mostly like a so you don't throw parties kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But it was definite, you know, like they want to get a feel of who's coming because it's like an important place. I don't, it just like is, it's a very specific.
Yeah, I think place. I think it's, I mean, it sounds like, I mean, it's as long as you're not being an asshole kind of, you know, like in mm-hmm. in an overall sense, you can't really stop or control what other people are doing, but as long as you consider this, you continue to see yourself as like, I guess, an outsider and not really a part of it, however much you want to be. That's kind of the best. That's the best way to be, in my opinion. Like that's yeah. I was kind of the same thing in Japan, where I was like, I went to the spots. I went to Tokyo Tower. I went Shibuya Crossing. Mm-hmm. I went to the places that are like the touristy places. Shibuya Crossing you can't avoid. That's like Times Square in New York. That's where the biggest train station is. That's just like part of it. But like for the most part, though, it was kind of, I'm going to go out, I'm going to put some headphones on, I'm going to walk around the place, right? And, like, I'll go into a place, and sometimes I'd walk in, and they'd say, no, leave, basically, right? And I'm like, all right, peace, see you later, right? And then I'd head out, because people, if they don't like tourists, they're very clear about it, right? And I'm like, damn, okay, that's fine. That. You're just taking a risk. You're kind of going in there expecting they're either going to love you or they're going to reject you, kind of, right? Or somewhere in between.
Wow.
And like in other examples, I go into a place and like it was my takoyaki place, and I made really good friends with Iko-san. And before I left Japan, I gave him my Cubs cap, you know. And keep up with these guys on texting and social media and stuff. So it's just going to be different from place to place, from person to person. But it's kind of just realizing that. It's kind of like you're a house guest, except for a whole country, you know, where it's like at any given moment, you have to realize that, like, you are an outsider and you don't really belong here. And to me, anyway, there's something kind of liberating about that, you know, because it's a little bit of like, I'm not directly involved with anything. I am literally here to learn and observe, you know. And was I perfect the whole time? No. Like, I got blackout drunk and threw up on the train and freaked out some poor people who are gonna, I don't think it's that unusual in Japan, so they probably won't, it's not like they'll never forget me or anything like that, because I'm sure they've forgotten already. But, like, I was the obnoxious person at one point. I was out of my fucking mind. I was way too drunk. My bad, guys, if you're ever listening to this. But, like, I mean, for the most part, it's like just be a good person, you know, and just kind of realize that, like, you're there to learn and you're not there to judge or to tell them how they should or shouldn't be acting. And you're a visitor in a foreign nation, you know. That's kind of what it comes down to. It's kind of like that everywhere too, though. Like within the United States as well. Like, just in general, in life in general, as long as you're not an asshole, then, like, you're fine. You're not really necessarily bothering anyone, you know?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah. I think inside of America too, like visiting a different city, it's obviously it's not as serious, obviously, but you could definitely like be heckled, you know, like Californian people don't like Californians. Like if you're visiting a place with a California license plate, I think you automatically kind of get looks, you know?
Yeah.
Or if you just walk into a place from a completely different city, you know, it's going to be people at least notice, you know, but it's not as serious.
Or if you're anywhere, any other country I've been to in my life that has not been Japan, even in Japan, a little bit of it. Right. But Japan loves Americans more. Japan loves Americans more than any other nation I've ever been to in the world. Everywhere else, they hate American tourists. And it's kind of, it's not your fault inherently as a Californian or as an American. It's the fault of your peers. It's the fault of the other Californians who they've witnessed who have been assholes. And so they have the judgment that every Californian's the same. Or every American's the same, or every anything's the same. And it's kind of, on some level, it's lack of perspective on their side, and it's lack of perspective on the side of the people who came before you too. But all you can do is be the best you can be, you know. You have to just not be like the others, and then they'll understand that you're chill. But people are gonna have their preconceived notions just from the sound of your voice, you know. And that's okay. That's just the way it is, you know.
Totally. It's crazy though. Like I I never really thought about it, you know. Maybe this is what I was trying to say earlier. I took a couple trips there with my family growing up, but nothing, it was never like a special place that I like, you know, had any real attachment to. It was just like a nice vacation that my family took randomly, like twice growing up. But by college, I met like actual native Hawaiians, a couple, and then I met Sam at Chapman, and I like now, you know, randomly follow a bunch of people on Instagram to like try to keep up and whatever. But like the people I met said that they don't stand up for the national anthem. Like it was like full on, they don't want to be associated. Like they aren't about anything. Like they feel completely separated from American politics and and everything. I'm like, bro, I never once even thought that that was a thing. Like, I've never thought about it. Can you imagine, like, what's up with Alaska then? They've probably got some crazy shit going
on. Dude, you're talking to an anti-nationalist here, though. You know, where it's like, I get it.
It's crazy.
I 100% get it. That it's like, so I mean, the flag represents a lot of things, you know?
Yeah, that was the fucking point of Winter Soldier, too.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's becoming more and more of a relevant point as time goes on. Like, I mean, speaking to my own experiences, right? Like, in terms of vacations growing up, we never did, like, the resort stuff, you know? Right. We never went to Sandals, we never did anything like that, like, which is a good thing. We'd go to... If we're going to Mexico, we're not going to go to like the nice resort on the beaches and never leave the resort. We're going to go to Oaxaca and like kind of like eat the street food and go to local restaurants and stay in like local hotels and stuff, right? And kind of experience the culture. Or wherever we go in the world, it's always kind of, that's always been the case. That's like we're here to experience rather than just kind of use it for our own thrill. And so, like, there's that level, but also, like, you know, like on in terms of the like seeing things differently and stuff. Like, my parents are Irish. I'm from America. I've said this to you a million times, so I'm not going to talk about it too much. But just that it's a weird, like, it's a very weird dynamic where it's like I'm kind of one foot in one end, another foot in the other end. And some people might look at it and they'll look at the optimistic way and say like I'm both. But honestly, I think the more optimistic way that I prefer to look at it is just I'm me. You know. I'm a citizen of both nations, and I'm not particularly allegiant to either nation. And that's fine.
So crazy, you know? That you can say that, man.
What do you mean?
That you're a citizen of both nations.
Yeah.
That's just crazy.
I can work in Europe. That's like the coolest thing about it now.
Yeah.
Is that it's not a whole, like, I don't have to have a job to live in Europe. Right. I can just kind of, as long as I can afford the plane ticket, I can just go there and live, you know. I've done it before. I did it in England for like 2 weeks. It's just different. It's just kind of, it's a thing of perspective, you know, like to get philosophical for a second, where it's like, if you're from a tiny remote fishing village, right. And you've never left the fishing village and like, you're in a pre-internet age, right? Where you're just kind of, or you're just not on the internet and you're not connected to anything outside. Like your world is that fishing village, right? In America, a lot of people who've never left America, their world is America or whatever region they've been to and stuff. Mm-hmm. I always kind of grew up as like a citizen of the world in a way, you know, where like I would be having my trivial high school problems and I'd get on a plane and go to Ireland. And I'd be like in the most beautiful place ever.
Yeah.
But being an angsty teenager, I'd be thinking about the girl who doesn't like me in high school back in Wilmette, Illinois. You know, like,
yeah.
It's crazy. Like I see it differently now, obviously, because I was a kid growing up. So I just didn't have the perspective. But drugs and travel really do make a difference, I guess.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's cool. I do. I find this stuff fascinating. I do, because it's like, in a way you can kind of see, and the thing that gets complicated with Hawaii is that now you have a lot of generations who are there, where they're not necessarily native people, but there have been families who've been there for a while. And like, to some extent, in the same way that like I was raised in America, but I have a good amount of Irish culture in me, but I wouldn't really be accepted by most Irish people as being Irish. I can see how that would be frustrating to somebody who was born in Hawaii. And is not, their ancestry isn't actually like native, but like what makes you belong in a certain place, you know? What makes you more or less legitimate? Because if it's just bloodline, then like that kind of sucks, to in my opinion, to a certain extent. Because I don't identify with a lot of my ancestors. My grandfather would fucking hate me, you know? And that's fine. I'm okay with that. Like he was a rural farmer, and he did his best for his time. And I paint my nails, he would fucking hate me for it, you know? But that's fine, because that's just how time goes on. We're on this earth, and it's like, don't worry about whenever people are like, oh, my great 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 grandmother's Irish, you know? It's like,
yeah,
just be a person, you know? You don't have to relate yourself to your like far off ancestry. I used to do it very directly, but I kind of learned that it's just so much easier if you're just kind of, you create your own worldview, you know, and you make your own identity.
That's nice.
Like, I'm not going to claim to be Japanese, but do I, because I'm obviously not even slightly, but like, I like a lot of the cultural stuff there, and I spent a good amount of time there, so I take inspiration in a lot of ways, and I like anime, I like movies and TV, you know, and like, I wanna write cartoons, and in the same way, and like, write stuff that's very kind of inspired by that culture, and that's fine, because it's like, it's internet, it's a global world now, we're so connected, we're too connected these days, like, do we really need to know about all the terrible stuff that's happening thousands and thousands of miles away? It kind of, it creates a weight on us, but at the same time, like, Avatar Last Airbender, you know that show?
Of course I do.
Did you watch it?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. In the third season, when they go to the Fire Nation, and they're in the Fire Nation for a bit, the crazy thing is they've been fighting the Fire Nation this whole time. But then when they go to the actual Fire Nation, they meet the civilians are just living their lives super nonchalantly, like nothing's happening outside of their borders, right?
Yeah.
We're the fucking Fire Nation, man. America's the Fire Nation. Like, that's kind of the reality of it. You can only do so much as an individual, and you can only kind of be on the right side of history, you know? But like, what's done is done to an extent. It's like, we just, I guess, make the world a better place however you can, you know, and try not to encourage or be a part of the problem, you know?
So yes, I agree with everything you said. And it's, that's dope. It's just dope. I would ask you, and obviously I know the answer, but it's cool to think about. It's definitely cool to think about. So would you consider yourself more American or Irish? You would say Irish, like, probably without much hesitation.
I think even here's the weird thing with America, right? America is such a big ass country, right? Mm-hmm. Like, people in New York versus people in LA think totally differently, you know? Or if you're in like the rural South, and then like a very small town there versus like a hyper metropolis, you know, like they, mm-hmm. we're a very split country because we're just so big. We're the size of a continent, you know? So yeah. Like, I'd be more inclined to say that I'm from the Chicagoland area than I'm American, you know? Because I have traits of that specific region. I have traits of Ireland in me because of my parents and spent time there and kind of like, in little ways, like I'll have a little bit of that in me too. Even spending the last 4 years in California, I have a bit of California in me too, you know? It's just everywhere you go influences you, and people get, because early childhood development years, they obviously influence you a lot as a person. But people think for some reason that once they're done with their education, they're done learning, you know? And you're never done learning. Your brain is always picking up information. You're always influenced by what's happening around you, no matter where you go. So it's kind of, you got to think of yourself as like, rather than thinking I am the way I am, think like, with what I've seen, how can I improve myself, or how can I evolve as a person, right? Not even improve, because that's a relative term, right? But it's like I went to Japan, and I kind of like, learned a lot about Buddhism and about sort of the cultural in Japan versus the culture here. Here it's kind of, it's a society built on religion, and a lot of the things that religion kind of emphasizes individuality. And it's about like, as an individual, what can I do to put myself ahead? And that's how you get things like capitalism, and you get people being like, I'm gonna forge my path and everyone else be damned because they're just haters, right? Yeah. Versus if you're in Japan, it's kind of, societally speaking, there's pros and cons of this, but it's more a sense of community on a wide scale, you know? It's like, I want to take up as little space as I can, and I want to promote the embetterment of everybody, not just myself, right?
Yeah.
And when I was there, like, I was an egotistical fuck for a lot of college, you know? And when I went there, I was kind of like, suddenly I didn't matter at all, because like, I was just the random faceless white guy on the train, you know? Yes, but I kind of liked it in a way, because it was like, yeah, I don't matter, you know? And there's something kind of liberating to that, where it's like, I can, I can, I can, I can forge a path and I can do right in the world without hurting other people, you know? And it's not kind of a everyone else be damned, like I'm gonna do what I wanna do. It's not that kind of logic, because ultimately that kind of logic is gonna, it's great for now, but eventually it's gonna lead you down a terrible path, and you're gonna end up miserable, you know? Because no amount of money, no amount of pride or any of these things that are kind of pretty objectively bad traits, right? Mm-hmm. It's just gonna make your head swell. It's just gonna give you the wrong idea of what matters in life. What really matters is like having a good conscience and being good to the people around you, you know, and trying to make the world a better place. And I say that as somebody who's like I don't do much community service, and I'm not dedicating my life to any like great causes or anything like that. I write fucking movies, you know, like I'm not doing anything that don't even get made, right? But at the same time, with what I do write, it's like I wanna portray that idea of perspective. The thing that annoys me more than anything about going to all these places and kind of like if I am here and then if I go to Ireland or like when I studied abroad in Japan or something, right? The thing that annoys me the most is that like you're in the suburbs of Chicago, right? Like where I went to high school. And people have a certain idea of the way that things should be, and they're so stubborn and they think they're so right, you know? They think that I'm right and everybody else is wrong and this is the way it should be. You go to Japan, they look at things totally differently, and they say, I'm right and everybody else is wrong, and this is the way things should be. You go to Ireland, they see things totally differently, and it's like, I'm right, everybody else is wrong. And it's like, fuck off, you know? Because there's no one path. Just like, don't do this like subscribing to your nation's propaganda, essentially, you know? Rather than doing that, be an individual. Have your own identity, have your own thoughts on what you think, what a better world looks like to you. And like, you're not expected to change it. I honestly think that a lot of people who are, the reason being a politician is inherently kind of an evil job, is because you're a person who's saying that my opinion and my abilities matter enough that I should have influence over the lives of millions of people, you know? And of course, what are you going to do? What's the alternative, right? I don't have a solution. But at the same time, like, that's why a lot of the people who are in elected positions are fuckheads. And that's why I guess the best solution is to just say, don't let politics be a career, you know? Somebody does something else.
Yeah, that'd be crazy.
They serve an office and they go do something else. Plenty of countries do that. And that's the better way, because the problem you have is re-election, you know? People are doing things for their own asses rather than to help the greater good.
You can earn a lot of money if you're a politician, you know? Like people like Ted Cruz or like, you know, the Gavin Newsom, I bring them up to say like people that aren't president and vice president, you know, like that's like a job. Like it's like you're a fucking movie star kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing with all those kind of like revelations and stuff, I'm sure you've had the same questions, right? Where it's like, is going into entertainment a little bit kind of assuming that role and saying like, oh, I should, my voice should be heard, you know? But I think in a way, the way I look at it instead is I look back at like, in my darkest times, I loved movies and I loved TV shows and I loved all of these. I love these things that kind of pulled me through the worst parts of life, you know? And I like to think that even if I'm making something really stupid, that like maybe there's some teenager out there who's having a really bad day and watching something that I made will brighten that up a little bit, you know? Like the motivation of art should be kind of to inspire or to shed light on something or thematically or whatever, rather than to make profit, you know? Like to give you a shout out, like that fucking ad you put on your Instagram. Mm. You know that one that you posted? I liked that because that was fun. I saw that and I was like, okay, cool. He's doing something different. And that's why it's cool, you know, because I've never seen an ad like that. And it had like the editing. I genuinely laughed at it. I was being 100% genuine. I was blown. I was like lying in bed looking at that. And I was like, no fucking way Jake made that. I'm like, what? Like, no. And when you told me you did, I was genuinely blown away. Cause like your motivation for that couldn't have been like, I don't know, like nobody gave you a promotion after that or anything, right? And that even if they did, that wasn't your motivation. You were just kind of like, well, in a way, and in some sense, I'm like, I'm bored, so I'm gonna make something that I want to make, you know?
Yeah, at a very basic, at a very zoomed out view. Yeah, I basically because I was bored, right? I had nothing better to do, so I might as well do this. But then you zoom in, and it's my job, and it's the account I work on, and whatever. But yeah.
But you could have done anything. You could have just traced.
I could have. Yeah.
You could have painted anything by numbers, you know. But right, but you right, did something that you thought of that was kind of out there and a bit of a risk, you know.
Yeah. Every other week, it's the team I'm on, which is, you know, like 10 people ish that help run that account, which I told you is the social media account for the agency I work for. But it's just a rolling prompt, like every 2 weeks. That's basically like just a couple post ideas. And most of them are just, I only recently joined the account, but most of them are just like, oh, we should like post our awards that we've won. Or it's like, we should highlight a person who works here and like they can do like a day in my life video. You know, it's like very much like around what we do. Like very like promotionally, basically. But they keep assuring us like they want to come up with original things. Like they want to kind of like be their own BuzzFeed kind of thing, or like Snapchat, which I hate that content, but they do want to like be their own thing. So I was like, it would be funny if we did this. I pitched a couple of things like that are just like random, and they liked it. So it was definitely cool to see them make it. That was more so, you're the only person who noticed, honestly. But because I was happy with that one too, with how it turned out. And it's like, I didn't like write a feature or even like a short that won an award or that even like just got concept art made, let alone actually made a movie. But it was just like funny. Like I just like thought it was really funny. I don't know.
It was really funny.
That post.
Yeah. It's kind of a shit post, you know?
It was
in a way, and
I was like laughing to myself that they were even made it in the first place. Like I thought it was funny beyond it actually being funny, because that's up for debate. I just thought it was funny that like so many people had to work on this.
Yeah, yeah, and that's part of it, and that's why if people see it, they're like, okay, this is not the usual corporate bullshit, and people are sick of the usual corporate bullshit, you know, like on a much lesser scale, obviously, like when I was running the Father's Milk social page, right? For our old like sketch comedy group in college, like the president fucking hated me for it. And like, but everybody else, because they wanted me to like paint by the numbers and do the stuff that's going to promote the algorithm and kind of play ball with social media. But I was like, the reason I took that position was I was like,
so
I,
funny.
I was like, this is because I hated that. I hated. I never followed any of the clubs or any of the things, any of the annoying like promoting stuff on social media, because it's like it's all these exclamation points and all this fake enthusiasm and these fake smiles. And it's like certain people online who I can think of two people who post for every picture like this, you know, and it's like I'm going to do everything in my life to satisfy the other people. Versus if you're in a position like that where you have the reins and you're like, no, this is all stupid. Let's just make fun of it, you know? Like, that's what Wendy's did. That's what Burger King did. That's what all, like, Wendy's were the first ones to do it, and everybody copied them after that, where Wendy's would just kind of roast people on Twitter, you know? Whoever got the keys to the social media thing just kind of started roasting their fast food chains, and now since then, like, companies will try to do memes, do other things, but, like, the problem is that they're following the algorithm, you know, whenever it fails, whenever there's those cringy memes, when it's like a badly advertised thing, like make something new. Don't try to like jump in on something that you're no part of, you know, in the same way with nationalism, in the same way with Hawaii, in the same way with all this other stuff, you know, forge your own path, move to New York, become a bartender. that's the thing I was going to tell you. I'm trained to become a bartender.
Are you gonna for real?
My dad just sent me a mixology book in the mail today, and I'm gonna. He's talking to friends. He talked to this guy in his local bar in Evanston, and it's the book that he recommended because he said it's like the Bible of bartending. And so,
do you know what it's called?
I can bring. I'll grab it right now. You buy time for 1 second. I know where it is.
Okay. Well, I have a couple bartending books, and I follow like a lot of a lot of YouTubers. So I probably know of the book. I thought you had to go to bartending school, though. I thought you had to go to bartending school.
Wait, you tell don't, me the book. Apparently you don't, which is new to me. But Jerry Thomas, Bartender's Guide, containing receipts for mixing. All kinds of punch, eggnog, juleps, smashes, goblets, cocktails, sangrias, mulls. Wait,
goblets or gimlets?
I said it wrong. Gobblers. Cobblers.
Cobblers.
Yeah, but it's from his 1862 reprint.
So wow.
It's the old That's school. Sick. This is like all That's the cool, all bro. The originals. So I'm gonna do that. I'm gonna probably take a class too. But I always thought mm-hmm. you'd get a license, but you don't have to have a license apparently. You just have to know your shit.
Yeah, that's what I figured. That's so cool, bro. I never was gonna actually go down that path, but I really do like making drinks. It's really fun to know what the flavors are doing, I think, and then. Now it's like a whole separate like hobby. Like whenever I go out, I'm like really curious to see what their cocktail books are. Dee Dee and I, the other day, we had like one of our first like LA days out, which is nice because I grew up here, but now like we moved to the city basically and haven't been able to do anything. So all we did was go to a museum. We went to the Natural History Museum in LA and then wandered around Venice for a little and then went out to eat in Santa Monica and then slept at her place. So it was really cool. It was like, you know, fully a day out. But I chose the restaurant we went to because I watched a YouTube video all about the bar staff, because it's like all women and they've like invented like four of these like random drinks. And I had been drinking one of the drinks all summer because I like watched a different video about it. Or just about the drink. I had no idea that it was like this very specific bar team at this specific restaurant. But it's like a full thing. It's so cool. But it's, so I enjoy doing it like as a hobby, but I never actually would have done it. So that would be sick if you moved to New York and you become like an actual bartender.
Yeah.
Like at a real proper place where you can like create your own drinks and the names and like some kind of story behind it. Dude, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
It's a full thing. Like people really care about that.
It's like, I mean, like I was saying about like traveling and stuff, right? I love traveling. Yeah. And in a way, going to New York for a year feels like traveling to me, even because it's such a big country that it basically is, you know?
It is traveling.
Yeah. So
I'm moving to a new city.
I'm going to write and like I can write anywhere. So in that way, I guess I'm like further in my career, going to work on comics and that kind of stuff. But really it's about the experience, you know? It's about going there and kind of living a bit of life and being able to write about more by experiencing more, you know? But beyond that, just kind of having the experiences for myself. So knowing something like bartending, if I'm able to get those skills under my belt and able to get a job there in it, which like after COVID, so many people have left New York, the bars and restaurants are like desperately hiring. And apartments are so much cheaper at the moment because everybody's left. So like landlords really want people in there because somebody renting for cheap is better than an empty apartment, you know? So like it's a very good time to go now. And so just fuck it, you know? So if I get good bartending experience there, the reason I was kind of drawn to it was I found listings on Indeed for a place called The Villain's Hideout, which is it's like a comic book themed bar. It's like a super villain theme bar, and I think it's like a comic shop hybrid, so they also sell comics there. So that would be dope. I'd be working at a super villain bar, essentially.
Yeah, bro. Can you imagine? One of the places Dee Dee and I went to actually in Madrid, in Spain, but we found it, but then she kept going like through the rest of her abroad, and you know, like apparently like pregame their nights out there and stuff. It was a full on Spanish bar. Like actually, you know, it was in Spain. It was like a local Spanish hangout bar, but it was just like themed to old school movies. Like I don't know how to explain it more than that. They just had like a corner, like a very small corner that was like all decked out in Nightmare Before Christmas. And then over here, it's like all Lord of the Rings, but like just like a sliver, like basically one little table, and they had a popcorn machine behind the bar, and that was it. But it was so cool. We randomly found it. Like, it was just like a themed tiny ass bar. I remember I got a drink called Hades, themed after
the under Hercules, the right? Well, the Greek mythology god, man.
The Greek mythology, but that portion of the menu was like Disney themed. So it was supposed to be Hercules, right?
Cool.
And it was like a blue shot, but flaming. It was so sick. But like someone had to like create that and then be like, okay, well, that would fit in with this part of the menu. Like, it's a totally different way of being creative, which is like genuinely really fun.
Yeah, it's cool. It's another art form. A really cool, this just, it reminded me of something when you were telling your Spanish bar story, right? Not to upstage you, but I got a cool one I just thought of, right?
Fair.
When my family, this is when I was in high school, we were in Sicily, right? Which is that island off the coast of Italy, right? And this is just because there's like a crazy thing in the story. So we're at the end of our trip there, and we like started the trip in the capital city. And then we're Palermo, I think is what it's called. And we're after getting our dinner that night, and we have our flight the next morning. So we're thinking like we've been driving all day. So we're all kind of tired, and we're like, okay, I think we're going to hit the hay early. And as we're turning to our hotel, we hear someone go, "Kieran." And we're like, just so confused. We're like, did I turn to my mom with my mom, my dad, and my sister walking ahead. And we're like, I'm like, did you hear? My mom's like, yeah, it must've been somebody just saying something else. And we go into the hotel lobby. And coming in after us is my uncle and my cousin, who just also happened to be in Palermo, Sicily at the time, in that exact same hotel, staying in the same hotel. And they come in after, and they're like, and this sounds like a dream, but it's like real life. We're talking, we kind of vaguely knew that it was just, we just happened to both be like going to Sicily at the same time, but we didn't like make any plans to meet up. We didn't think our schedules were even going to intersect. My mom's sister had just told her that her husband and her son were going to be there. And we saw them. We're like, okay, fuck it. We're going to go out for some drinks. And then they're like, oh, we saw a cool bar on the way here. And we go out and like, there's a bar that's literally just in the back alley. And there's all these like plastic tables with like plastic chairs kind of set up around the place and like candles all over the place and stuff. And just in like a back alley kind of dimly lit. And we just go there and we have some drinks with our cousin, our uncle, who we just ran into in Sicily.
Yeah. That's nice.
Crazy. It's so cool. Traveling is so fucking cool.
Yeah, I think so too. Oh, dude. I think my dad, dude, I can't believe I didn't tell you this. I think my dad is going back on like his first business trip to fucking Tokyo in November. In November. Like in a couple months, like in November.
You didn't get a travel voucher, did you, for when your flight got canceled?
No, I mean, it was all through his work.
Okay, it's through work, gotcha.
That's why it worked so perfectly, dude. He had a work trip where work could pay for my flight. Not that it mattered, right? Like, I could have bought the flight, or honestly, I just could have asked my parents and they could have bought the flight. It doesn't matter. But it just worked perfectly that my dad was going, and it lined up with my spring break. And it was the only couple months that I had a friend there.
It was perfect.
It's gonna be fucking perfect.
But the other thing, there's two things, right? First of all, my parents did get travel vouchers, so I'm gonna be going back at some point within the next year. I cannot promise November. I will not make that promise. But my plan as stands is like I'm either going to I talked to my mom about this when she visited like a weekend ago. That the plan would be, because I was talking to her and she's like, my mom was saying fully to me that like if you're there with us the whole time, we're gonna drive you nuts. Because I'm used to being there on my own and just being like the lone wolf and stuff, right? And if I'm with my parents who are 32 years older than me, that's gonna be a little bit of an issue. And so
they would
I said,
have fun with you. They would have fun with you, but it wouldn't be the same.
Yeah, we'd have fun, but I said to her, I said like it's gonna be one of two things. Either I'm gonna like just hang out with you certain days and then go off on my own other days and stuff, or else like I'm gonna either stay a bit longer before or after, right? Yeah. I'll stay a bit longer before, or I'll stay a bit longer afterwards. So like, theoretically speaking, I don't know when that point comes, but theoretically speaking, you could theoretically hop on a plane and come over and we could live that out. But the other thing also to note is that when I'm in New York, in addition to doing the bartending stuff, I still am fully doing my plan to learn Japanese. So
yeah.
I'm gonna like take classes there and like properly like hunker down and try to try to learn it, because if I do want to go into comic books, there's very few things in this world that would be more beneficial than learning Japanese. So
that's very true. That's
so I will detail. I will be back. You will have plenty of opportunities to go to Japan with me.
Yeah, that's the thing, to go to Japan with you, bro.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I was looking
You'll have opportunity, because I'd love to live there for like a good amount of time in my life. Probably not, I don't know about necessarily like the rest of my life, but like just because of that whole outsider thing we're kind of talking about before, where they are very like I would always be an outsider. I would never be fully accepted, which is fine. That's the way it should be. But yeah, I would definitely love to live there for a bit, because it's just such a fucking cool place. But we talked about it endlessly. There's a funny thing though. I saw an article this week that's kind of along those lines. There was this dude at Marvel who was an editor, right? He was like a guy higher up in it. He's a white guy, right? And he created a pen name for himself. And his pen name was a Japanese name. And he started writing Japanese comic books, being a white guy, pretending to be a Japanese writer writing Japanese comics.
Wow.
So fucked up. Yeah. And when the news came to light, Marvel briefly fired him before rehiring him, right? And in the period of time between when he got fired, he wrote a comic about his sexual awakening in the guise of like a Japanese boy, which is like, that's when you get problems, you know? That's when you get problems, when people go places and they think that like they truly do are a part of that culture, when you just never could be, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Anyway, I think we're at time, because we went over the hour, I believe.
More or less. Well, actually, I realized halfway through that I'm too out of it, if you know what I mean, wink, wink, to make food. So I literally DoorDashed in the middle of us. I have sushi coming.
Oh, cool. Okay, we can keep talking.
Yeah. We totally can. Yeah. Well, my notification is that it got picked up. So I have like 10 more minutes.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
You want to talk about Satanism?
Yeah, go for it. Can I actually ask you something? Yeah, sure, we can talk about that. But I know that your version of Satanism is different than like the actual worship of the devil type thing. It's more of a philosophy. But because it obviously has to do with the devil, at least a little bit, because it's named after it, have you ever heard of or know anything of, or is the Satanism ever reference Paradise Lost, the like epic poem?
I don't know. Explain.
Paradise Lost is a book that I read in high school, basically about this. So the story of it is the events of the Old Testament, but basically through the eyes of Satan. So it's like told from his perspective. So you see that actually he's not the bad guy, or at least he doesn't think he was the bad guy. He was like fighting a noble fight. So it's like, you know, all the events of Adam and Eve and all like the events of like the creation of Earth, like basically what was Satan doing at the time. And it's really cool. And it really captured my attention in high school. Like I did not read the books. I think now looking back, it's probably because I have a little bit of dyslexia. So it's probably, I know that sounds whack, but I think there's a decent amount there. But Paradise Lost really caught me, and I kept up with the reading, and like that's what I like wrote all my papers about that year, and it just like stuck with me for whatever reason. I really liked the book. But the kind of context of the book was, there was some version of a civil war going on in England at the time. I want to say it was like the Martin Luther era that like had to do with politics and like the church splitting up in one way or another. You probably know more about it than I do.
I don't. I know as it pertains to Irishness only, but because of nationalism, I do not have much English education, because my family has the United Front of fuck England. Even though not really, but just in terms of like they gotta keep up appearances, you know?
Right, I know what you're saying. I don't know this, it was just like a period of civil war and of civil discourse in terms of politics and religion in England. Like, I want to say like the 1600s, like a long ass time ago, probably even earlier. But someone involved with that situation, like who worked for the church or something at the time, which was like politics back in the day, was hiding out in like in his friend's basement, because if he was caught outside during the Civil War, he would have like literally been guillotined. Like, it was that period in history. And while he was living in the basement of somebody, while there was like some form of a civil war going on upstairs outside, he went blind.
Wait, do you know what civil war it was? I might have missed that.
Whatever the Martin Luther period of England was.
Oh, okay, the Protestant Reform. Okay, you know what? I take it back. I actually do know about that stuff because I went to Catholic school. So
exactly. Yeah. It was that. And somebody who worked for the church, that if he was caught outside, he would have like literally been guillotined. Mm-hmm. It was like something along those lines, or at least that's how it was described to me. He was having these crazy vivid dreams about like the devil, like, but these like beautiful scenes, like it wasn't scary, but Satan was always the main character. So he recited the story to the person he was staying with, and he like transcribed it basically. And the story ended up in perfect iambic pentameter, which is so fucking nuts. That the dude went blind living in someone's house for religious persecution, and then was able to deliver the story of Satan in perfect rhymes, basically. So it's just reportedly. Sure, but that that's the story of it though, and it trickled all the way down like hundreds of years to me having to read it in high school. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was just so cool. There was like so many like anecdotes. It was even like the way it was written, not even the actual story.
Yeah.
That was so cool. Well, but that has nothing to do with Satanism, apparently. I was just wondering.
Well, this is this one is like, I didn't even read the whole thing, but I read excerpts of it and stuff. But this was made in the 70s. This book was published in the 70s, 1970s.
Right.
So yeah, this is like the modern Church of Satan. I'm not a Satanist, to preface to anyone listening. I'm a curious mind, right? And I like to read different perspectives and stuff. But Satanism is basically just the opposite of Christianity, right? Whereas Christianity are kind of like, there's only one way and you have to observe these specific rules, right? Whereas Satanism borrows off of all of the philosophy of history and kind of just has its own take on it, where it says that like, it just renounces the idea of like goodwill or morality or any of those kind of things, and says that no, we are just animals, and we have this God complex within all of us that we believe that we have to ascribe to some higher purpose that doesn't really matter, when really we're all just flesh and blood, so we should do what we want to do, kind of, right? You obviously like risk the consequences of that, right? Like if you commit a crime, as a Satanist, you don't have the obligation to say, hey, I committed this crime, but at the same time, like, you're still going to serve it like anyone else. You don't think you're above anyone, but it's just basically the same to humans or animals, you know? And that we're all, it doesn't actually believe in the devil. It says it's called Satanism because they don't want people appropriating them, essentially, right? That's why it's called Satanism, because Satanism, a title like Satanism makes somebody not want to pick up the book, right? Unless if they do want to pick up the book and they read it and then they're like, oh, I actually subscribe to this, and then they become a Satanist, right? Because that curiosity is there. Whereas if it was called something else, people might kind of say, oh yeah, I'm this thing because it's trendy to be so, and then it becomes a fad and a trend, right? So they kind of say in the very first chapter, they say that like, if you're cherry picking individual pieces of this, fuck off, you're not a Satanist, right? That's kind of what they say immediately. So that's why I say I'm fully not a Satanist. I think it's interesting. I think there's ideas in there that are really like, because I'm agnostic. I went to Catholic school 7 years. Prior to that, my family never really had that much of a religious sense. My dad's an atheist, my mom is an agnostic. They were both raised in very Irish Catholic households where they were forced to go to church all the time and stuff. But I didn't really, so like, that wasn't even the conversation we had at the table up until I went to Catholic school that I remember. And then all of a sudden I was thrown into a world where every single morning you prayed to God and said, thank you for everything. And every time before you ate, we said prayers in school. We have mass at least once. We'd have chapel once a week, and we'd have mass probably once a month, which is the bigger service. And then when it got to high school, every single day on the PA, no matter what you're doing, even if you have a big exam that you have to do in like 30 minutes or something, everybody has to stop what they're doing, put their pencils down, while on the speaker they go, now we're going to have a moment of silent reflection. And they're going to ask questions like, am I doing everything I can to service God, right? And imagine being there and you know all this is bullshit, right? And that's kind of where I was.
That's insane, bro.
So at the time I was a teenager and I was rebellious. So I was like, okay.
I would not like that.
I didn't like it. I didn't like it one bit. Mm-hmm. I was always so adamantly against it. Other people were like, oh, whatever. It just is the way it is, right? And I was always the one who was kind of like, no, fuck that. You know, I didn't actively say that because I had no confidence at the time. But like, I was like, to my friends, I would be like, no, fuck this shit. Right. And because none of the students actually believed, because it's such an archaic way of thinking. You know, it's only like the people who had really strict parents who didn't let them think any other way. And they thought there was no other way. So my reaction during that time was to say, I'm going to be a full blown atheist. I'm like, there's no meaning. There's no spirituality to anything. And I maintained that even like through last year. And then when I went to Japan and I was walking around, like you're in a random, we pointed a random spot on the map, go to this town, and we're at a temple during sunset. And the monks are doing their sundown worship. And there's these giant, beautiful statues that there's no one around to see because there's no tourists there. It's not a touristy spot. It's just commonplace. And they're ringing the bell at sunset. That's how I feel about
Hawaii, by the way.
Yeah. And it's like, I'm there and it's like, I thought to myself, like, I got to be such an arrogant prick to say that I know for sure that anything is one way or the other way. You know, there's no truth. There's no universal truth. There's nothing. Nothing is right or wrong. And nothing is true or false. So theoretically, there could be a God, but it's one of infinite possibilities out there, you know, and really we're too small to know, in the same way that like an ant couldn't possibly understand what we think. There's a huge cosmos out there, you know, and we would be so vain as people to say that any one person could really understand it, no matter what holy book you have, no matter if the dude was blind and wrote an iambic pentameter, right? Like, good for him, right? Yeah. I don't believe it, but like, good for him, right? That's how the story goes, right? But basically I've heard of Paradise Lost, and what something like Paradise Lost is saying is honestly like, that's kind of what my feature is about to an extent, but we'll talk about that later. I won't plug my feature on the radio show. But like the ideas of good and bad in our society are based off of the history of our society and what our parents have taught us and what their parents taught them, and going all the way back. And all religions go back to the same origin point. Like Christianity at one point was Judaism, right? With the New Testament, or the Old Testament is the same as the Jewish holy text, if I'm correct in that. I think it is. So like, it's all same.
Just different language.
Yeah, it's all coming back to the same, like the Ten Commandments of thou shalt not do this, thou shalt do this, right? This is right, this is like, this stuff's right, this stuff's wrong. And on some level, like that stuff is based off of a world where if there was just total anarchy, you can't expect people to get along and for reasonable society to form, because people have nothing to kind of keep them based. And so historically, religion has served a lot of bad purposes, but it's also served the good purpose of like giving people purpose, you know, because people sort of need something to strive for, right? And in that way, it's good. You can strive towards being a good person. A lot of the foundation of these religions are based on things that are good for a healthy mind, right? If you're kind to others, you're going to have a better heart. You're going to be able to sleep better at night, you know? If you're taking care of yourself, like as they say in Christianity, that like, take care, you're God's creation, so you have to take care of God's creation, right? So if you're doing that, you're taking care of yourself, you're happier in life, and you're able to help others, and they become happier. It spirals, it gets better, like all that kind of stuff. When it goes wrong is when people like stick to a text and say that this is right and that you're wrong, you know? It's like anything else where it's like, it's just open-mindedness is the key, you know? That never assume yourself to be correct too much. Because you can't be too sure of anything, you know? And really at the end of the day, the only thing you can rely on is being a good person to other people, right? So that's where Satanism goes wrong, in my opinion, because Satanism kind of, it says there's no religion, and for that reason, I can do whatever the fuck I want. And that's just kind of, that's sort of, it's a little bit, it's a philosophy, right? So I'm not like being critical of anyone really, like this is just my opinion. But like something like Satanism, you're kind of saying, literally that's the logic of it, is that like nothing else is real, so I'm just going to do what I want. First of all, you're assuming that because you don't really know that for sure. You don't know that there's no spiritual presence in the world. But even beyond that, that's not the logical conclusion you should come to given that situation. You shouldn't want to burn everything just because it's not perfect, you know? You should want to make it better. You should want to build it up. You should want to do whatever you can to make the world a better place. And Satanism is kind of a little bit petty, you know? It's a little bit sort of like, the world is a terrible place, and it fucks with people in all kinds of ways, and people, a lot of very good people don't get what they deserve, obviously. But that doesn't mean that you should look at it and say, well, I'm just going to burn it all down then, or I'm just going to twist the narrative to help myself, you know? Because Satanists do that, capitalists do that, Christians do that, Jewish people do that. Everybody does that.
Everyone.
Right? Everyone does that, and really kind of... That's and like it's my opinion because there is no right or wrong. Right or wrong, there's only values ascribed to us by society and the people around us and culture in general. But I guess realizing your own real insignificance can seem daunting, but it's actually really liberating. You know, that's the argument I'd make.
It's a nice way to look at it. It's a nice way to take in like the world's information. You know.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's Satanism. Satanism's idea is kind of that wasn't what I said wasn't Satanism's idea, but Satanism's idea is kind of it's that idea that like, okay, so everybody else fucked up the world, that's not my fault, so I'm gonna twist it however I can to benefit myself, right? And in a way, with your Paradise Lost, right, that it's in the perspective of the devil. What that's portraying is that really the devil or demons or any of those things in parables and stuff is just a representation of people motivated by things that Christian fundamentalists can't understand, you know, where it's like, they used to call all kinds of people who just anyone who wasn't Christian was a savage, right? That's what they used to say. And like, these things are good, these things are bad because God says so. And it's like, it's just this self-importance that's the problem. And we all have it as humans. It's a thing you have to constantly wrestle. Like, I'm talking about this like I'm above it all. I'm not above any of it, you know? Like, I have my moments too where I struggle with that kind of stuff, you know, of like you gotta do some stuff for yourself. You can't be a totally selfless person. In a way, you have to help yourself so you can help others, kind of. But you don't want to, it's a bit like Icarus. If we're talking about, you mentioned Hades earlier and like Greek mythology, right? That's the way that I like to relate it to, that where it's like, if Icarus flies too close to the sun, with pride comes the fall, right? He goes down to the waves. If he flies too low, the waves get his wings wet, right? That's if he's like too depressed and stuff, right? And then he just plunges anyway, right? The best happy medium you can be is realizing that you're just here to live a life, and you're here to kind of the people who sort of assume the best in people, and the people who deserve, the people who live up to those expectations, continue to see the good in them and stuff. And the people who aren't, like, they're not bad people. They're just at different stages of their life. But it's kind of, you do to some extent have to say to yourself that if somebody is a negative drain or doing something bad for your life, it's only your obligation to a certain extent to look out for them, you know, because at some point you are just sacrificing yourself for them. And I don't think self-sacrifice is really the right way to go. You know, as cool as it is to jump in front of a bullet to save the president, like, he's just another person, you know, like, whatever.
It's a very zoomed out way to look at things, but it's definitely nice.
Yeah.
To say the least.
It's a moral guide. Anyways, I went to Catholic school.
Yeah, apparently, which is couldn't be more different from what you were saying.
Yeah, where you went to public school, right?
No, I went to public school through middle school, and then Viewpoint was a was a private school, but it wasn't affiliated with any, like,
okay,
any
religion. I was about to say, specific. If you were going to tell me that that was Jewish school, I would have, that would have made my eyes, like, fall out of my sockets.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, because I've met your friends from there. If you're telling me that every single one of them are, like, adamant Jewish people, then I'd be like, what? No way.
No. Yeah. Would have been cool, though. Anyways, I gotta go deal with Postmates. I gotta get my Postmates.
No pirate. I didn't have the pirate ready, but walk the plank.
I figured.
Walk the plank. I'm gonna end the recording.